This is Bill the Butler of Cheese Radio from MaineInternetRadio.com, and this is the first episode of the Butler Did It podcast. Welcome and thanks for tuning in. In 2010, I was prepping for an episode of my quarterly radio show, The Midnight Album Premiere, when the opportunity presented itself to sit down with Gene Fogelberg, widow of singer-songwriter Dan Fogelberg, just before his final album, Love and Time, was released. The first question I asked her was how they met.
I was playing guitar and singing in a cafe in Santa Fe, and Dan was looking for some good ravioli, so he came in to eat there. And when he was leaving, he saw the poster with my advertisement on it and came back in to hear me.
When you two finally got together, was this before he moved to Maine, or was he still living in Colorado at the time?
He has had the house in Maine for a really long time, like 30 years. So he'd had the house for a long time before I met him.
I noticed when you go back through the history of some of the interviews he's given, he talks an awful lot about how beautiful the Rockies were and Colorado was. And then you come to Maine, which is like the exact opposite as far as there's no giant canyons or big mountains and snow-covered mountains and such. What was it that appealed to him about Maine in particular then?
He and his first wife, Maggie, were in Europe having a vacation. And on their way back, she suggested they stop in Maine because she had taken ballet lessons here. So he just fell in love with it, had a reel to show him around, and then found the old captain's house there on the coast and just fell in love with it. And then fell in love with sailing and then became a consummate sailor.
Now, the record itself is got a few seafaring songs in it. Tell me a little bit about what changed when he became a sailor in his music.
What changed about his music? Well, he started writing songs about the sea, where before he was writing songs about the mountains.
Now, did you share a lot of time on the water together?
The water was sometimes his time to get away, his place to completely be alone. When he first bought the house in Maine, there was no telephone there. And for many years, no telephone, because he wanted to be completely cut off from the office. No one could reach him. And I think sailing always remained that way for him. We did cruise together, and that last year we had a two-week cruise where we just went to all his favorite places.
You're both musicians, so did you play together?
At home, sure, sure. And sang together. We did Beatles songs mostly, and harmonies.
These songs that are about you in particular, tell me, I mean, when he wrote them, were you present during the writing process?
Yeah. Sometimes a song. He had gone back to Colorado to finish up some things at the ranch and to finish this up. And I stayed here in Maine and finished up our new house. So he was gone for about a month and a half. That was during Valentine's Day. So he wrote me sometimes a song for a Valentine's present and sent that to me with some flowers.
That's awesome.
And come to the harbor, they were having a regatta at Wooden Boat. And he had gone over for that. He was sailing around and decided to stop in for that. So he called me and said, hey, they're having a dance here tonight. Why don't you come over? And so while he was waiting for me to come over, he sat down and wrote Come to the Harbor. And then Birds, he just dedicated that to me.
Is it hard to listen to?
Yes. Yes. I just got the CD yesterday. And mostly when I was listening to it, I was trying to listen with a musician's critical ear because I had to produce the album. I needed it to be, get the right person to mix it and master and do all those things. So having the CD now and listening to it with no worries, it's already out, it's kind of a different experience. Birds has always been hard for me to listen to. It was hard for me to listen to before I even realized he had dedicated it to me.
One of the things that I've experienced is that the relatability of the songs. My mother died when I was still a little boy, so my grandfather raised me. And when he got older, my wife and I moved in to take care of him. He passed away in 2007. And I didn't allow myself time to grieve because I was too busy. I was driving to a DJ gig, a wedding, and Leader of the Band came on.
Oh.
And in that drive, I have not cried to a song before. And in that drive,
yeah.
I just lost it. I mean, that was just, it was a very connected moment. And yeah. even Same Old Lang Syne, where I connected to that one, too. I actually lived. I met my old girlfriend at a grocery store. It wasn't on Christmas Eve, but the concept was the same. I mean, so many people have related to his music. When fans or friends even talk to you about how they relate to his music, is that a common thread?
Yes. I'm really not surprised about Leader of the Band. So many people relate to that song with their fathers. But I am surprised that how many people are run into ex-lovers in the grocery store. I never have.
On the website, it says that he recorded this album, most of it before, or all of it before he found out about his diagnosis.
He started it before, when he was compiling songs to do a live CD. And then he started coming across these old demos and thinking, well, this is a good song. Well, that's a good song. And when he would come up, he kept commenting on how quickly, how easily it was coming together and how much fun he was having going through old demo tapes and finding these songs and then laying down, you know, the new instrumentals and vocals and harmonies. And then when we got the diagnosis, we had to stop, and then we came to Maine. Then the next year he went back and continued with the project.
His instructions were to release it after he passed on?
Mm-hmm.
What was the motivation behind that?
I have no idea. You know, when we came to Maine, everything was about being stress-free. Everything was about fighting the cancer. We basically left everything music-related behind. And we didn't discuss the CD. We didn't discuss plans for it in any way. When it was finished and he put it in the safe deposit box, that's all I knew was that that I would release it when he was gone. We didn't listen to it or discuss the package or anything about it. We just lived, we wanted to live a normal life. We just wanted to sail and do photography and just be together. And just felt that was the best way for him to fight the cancer, is to avoid any stress.
If Dan could send a message out to men about what he experienced, what would he want them to know?
To get tested, and when you get tested, take responsibility for finding out your test results. Don't assume your doctor is going to give you all the information. You need to be informed. You need to know what PSA numbers are indicative of you know, cancer. You need to know that if you have a high result on your PSA or if your DRE isn't satisfactory, that you have options. You need to discuss it with your doctor and decide what the next step is and what the best next step is.
Do you think that part of his legacy is going to be able to help other men who might be able to detect the cancer earlier?
It already is. I've gotten a number of emails from men who got checked because they read what Dan said on the website, and a number of them have found the cancer. A few of them are cancer-free because they found it in time. If you find it in time, it's treatable. It's one of the most treatable cancers. It's just finding it in time. And there's a lot of controversy about the PSA test right now, and they're working on other tests. But the thing I think that holds a lot of men back is that there are some men who get biopsies who didn't actually need a biopsy. They could have watched and waited. They could have watched the PSA number to see if it went up, because it's also, especially in older men, one of the slowest growing cancers. Here's your PSA number. Let's watch it. And that's fine. And then if it starts going up, then you can talk about biopsies and surgery. And the key is finding it before it spreads beyond the prostate.
Let me ask you about this last week, because it came out Tuesday. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
What was Tuesday, say, afternoon like, when you knew the record was out and people were able to hear it? Did it bring back feelings?
No, because I knew that it would be released on Tuesday, and so it would start to ship on Tuesday. But people aren't getting it until now. I mean, depending on how they bought it, unless they went down. I talked to a couple of people who went to Barnes & Noble, and it was sold out in 2 hours, so they weren't able to get it. So then they had to find something
else.
That's
awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
And Amazon sold out at one point and had to order more. But no, I just been kind of waiting till people got it, because we have a lot of people that write into the website. And I just was waiting to see what they thought when they got it and when they actually had the package in their hands. There's a number of diehard fans who their whole lives have looked forward to the new release and look forward to opening the cellophane of the album, or, you know, the CD or the cassette, and listening with the package, well, looking at the package and reading the lyrics while they're listening. And there were a number of people who said they didn't even listen to the downloads. They didn't listen to anything on the internet. They were going to wait until the package was in their hands, just like they always had done.
Our next episode will continue my conversation with Gene about Dan's career and his final album, Love in Time. I'm Bill DeButler from Cheese Radio, and this has been the DeButler Did It podcast. Send your questions and comments to cheeseradio@mail.com and get details on Cheese Radio at maineinternetradio.com.